This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being. We have with us online Michael Trudeau from Colonial Resources, and we're going to be talking about what's happening to the economy. Now, Michael is one of the supporters of our programs. I've known him for a long time. He was many years with Genesis, a very astute observer as to what's happening. Today, Alan Greenspan testified before the Senate Finance Committee and basically said that considering the obligations we have for Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, the federal budget is on an unsustainable course. The federal budget is on an unsustainable course, which is, of course, greenspeak for meaning we are in terrible trouble and there's no way out. Michael, how are you doing this evening? Michael, are you there?
I'm doing pretty well.
All right, fine. When Alan Greenspan tells us our federal budget is on an unsustainable course, I think what he's telling us is we are in deep trouble.
We're doomed. You know, after talking with you quite a while back, and we'd mentioned both of us talking about Roach's comments from Morgan Stanley regarding the economic Armageddon that's been predicted. Well, it's not just Roach. It's a lot of these paper houses that are now coming out and saying, hey, look, we're in real trouble here. And I find that to be an interesting paradigm because of the fact that, generally speaking, these are the guys who really are bullish when it comes to the economy. They want you to always believe the economy's in full swing, going gangbusters, buy more stock. So it's interesting to see these huge stock firms go out and say, gee, it really looks scary out here. You should maybe buy some metals.
Well, I think it was so interesting that simply within the last 10 days, I guess I think it was the 10th of this month, April 10th, Paul Volcker wrote an article that was published in the Washington Post talking about the fact that he was very, very concerned that we were skating on very, very thin ice and that we were not going to do what was necessary to remedy the situation.
Well, it's an interesting thing because you really have to ask what would be the correct thing to do to remedy the situation. At this point, it really has got it so bad that anything that we attempt to do now to fix this deficit problem is only going to lead us into another problem.
I agree with you totally. Well, so what do you think people should be doing?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things that I think people should be doing. The first thing I think people should do is begin the education process. I mean, I know, Stan, that certainly you have gone to great lengths to educate yourself about the Federal Reserve and about this system and how this is all working, and I have too. And the thing about it is that, you know, it took both of us probably quite a lengthy period of time to come to this level of knowledge that we have through this education process. And my point in this is I don't want people to believe that...
Hold that thought for just a moment.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we're just going to our break. But anyway, go right ahead, Michael.
Well, yeah, and I think that it comes down to people needing to realize that an education process is the very best thing that they can do and that it doesn't have to take a decade. You don't have to begin this process and think, you know, 10 years from now I'll have some knowledge of how this whole scam is working. In reality, there's enough pieces of information that have been put together and that are available for people to just do small amounts of research on the internet. Look at that blank stare happen. And, well, what do you mean? Who owns the Federal Reserve? Well, it's the government. And then you point out that it's a privately owned corporation having nothing to do with government. And that blank stare gets wider and wider. And you can see, simply put, that the individual you're talking to in a day really has almost no working knowledge of how this is happening. And at that point, it's a simple process of just simply saying, I'm going to educate myself. I'm going to go online. And even simply going to like a search engine like a Google or a Yahoo and typing in Federal Reserve System. And, of course, you're going to have plenty of websites that will start off that are actually coming from the Federal Reserve, but you'll also find plenty of information from individuals like myself and you, Dr. Stan, that are posted on the Internet talking about the Federal Reserve's fraud. And I think that's where you start this process, because it does come down to education. You just can't walk up to somebody and go, you know, there's this corporation called the Federal Reserve that's been stealing America's wealth blind now since 1913. They have almost all of it. What are you going to do about it? Because people look at that kind of knowledge or that kind of information and say, you just, you know, force-fed me a mountain of information here that I have to disseminate over a lengthy period of time before I'm just going to believe you and make changes in my lifestyle that I've had for 40 years.
Well, I think the important thing, of course, is for people to understand that we have a totally fraudulent money system. We have something called a fiat money system, and that is where the central bankers who control the monetary system of our country and of every other country in the world, and they are all privately owned central banks, have created a monetary system based upon a foundation of quicksand. And basically, Aristotle talked about this. There's nothing new about this. This has been tried many times before. Aristotle, writing in the time of ancient Greece, said this about a fiat money system. There's nothing inherently wrong, in effect, with fiat money, provided we get perfect authorities and godlike intelligence for kings. There's nothing wrong with a fiat money system, provided we get perfect authority and godlike intelligence for kings. I wonder how many people honestly believe we have perfect authority and godlike people in Washington, D.C., running the affairs of our country. And if you don't believe that, then you'll understand we're in real trouble today.
Certainly the people up there on Capitol Hill believe it.
Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest this evening is Michael Trudeau of Colonial Resources. And the problem that we have is that we have politicians in Washington, D.C. who refuse to do what's right. They refuse to cut government spending, because if they did, why, of course, they would not have be able to buy the support of so many people out there and remain in office. We have politicians who want to provide something for everybody. And it was in 1787 when a man named Alexander Tyler, who was a professor of ancient history in Edinburgh, University of Edinburgh, wrote a treatise, and this is 1787 when they're writing our Constitution. He said this: democracies are temporary forms of government. They last only until people find that they can vote themselves into the largesse of the public treasury. People vote for the man who promises to give them the most. The country goes bankrupt and is replaced by a despotism. Now, that is what was known in 1787, which is why our founding fathers did not create a democracy. They created a republic. But unfortunately, why we've embraced these incredible concepts, and today why we are on the brink of financial destruction, and the average individual has no idea. And the reason is because we have something called the plunge protection team, and it manipulates the stock market. And we saw that today when it went up 200 points. That wasn't the average investor buying. That was the plunge protection team funded by the Federal Reserve System and certain major brokerage houses, conspiring and violating the law and manipulating the stock market. But you see, when they do it, it's all right. If you and I did it, it would be criminal activity. And what they're doing is controlling how we look at things. If we look at the stock market, it's going up, things can't be bad, no matter what all the financial indicators show us. So pick up from there, Michael.
One of the things that you just touched on is the fact that, you know, we are heading for this despotism, and there's no question that that's occurring. And again, this is something that isn't just happening as of the last decade. This is something that was begun in 1913. A lot of people talk about various dates as to when this all began, but look, it really did begin in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act being signed by Wilson. And the bottom line to that was, here was an individual who said, yeah, you get me elected here. You give me the money, you make the machine work, you get me elected, and I'm going to sign that act if we can get Aldrich to push this thing through. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. Nelson Aldrich, the maternal grandfather of the Rockefellers, pushed the Federal Reserve Act through Congress just before Christmas, when most of Congress was on vacation. And then, of course, as promised, when elected, Wilson passed the Fed. It was interesting, though, to note that some point later, Wilson remorsefully replied, referring to the Fed, "I have unwittingly ruined my country." And, I mean, here is the bottom line. We literally were sold up the river, so to speak, at that point in time when they allowed a private corporation to take over manufacturing our currency and regulating the value of it.
Well, I agree with you, and I share your concern. And so I really think that people have to understand that right now we're in a lose-lose situation. We have inflation. We have about 9% inflation, contrary to what the government is telling you. Because, you know, the old saying is, figures don't lie, but liars figure. And anybody who believes we have a 2% or maybe even a 3% inflation, you really doesn't have eyes to see with. And it's an old adage we've used so many times before. Are you going to believe what the government tells you, or going to believe your lying eyes as you see the rate of inflation rising? You see what's happening to gasoline prices, to healthcare prices, to housing prices, to food prices. And they say, well, of course, we're going to take all of those things out of the out of the equation. We're just going to figure out what the goods coming in from China cost. See, they're not going up that much in price, so there's no inflation. And it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincingly enough, and every means of communication says it, and the people who control the Federal Reserve Board say it, and the people who control the Commerce Department say it, and nobody ever tells you any different, eventually people are going to believe we don't have any inflation. We've had, 9% inflation for several years now, and the value of the savings, the life savings of the American people, is being intentionally stolen without their knowledge at all.
Well, and it's an interesting way that they do it, too. What they'll do is they'll build that economy up because they can control it completely, knowing that they can create money at will. They simply expand or contract the monetary supply. That's what's creating a boom or a bust economy. So they give you the boom economy, everything gets rosy and built up, everybody's confident, I got a great job, everybody I know has a great job, this is fantastic, what a wonderful world, you know what, I deserve a bigger house. I deserve a little bit nicer car, so I go out and extend myself. And I begin to purchase those things because, after all, I'm working really hard and I got this great economy behind me, backing me, so why not? The next thing that happens when we get to the full hilt of a full-blown, wonderful economy, out comes the rug. We go right into recession. Companies start downsizing. People begin losing their jobs. And guess what happens to that beautiful house and car? It's repossessed for the car and your home is foreclosed on. Well, what happened to those items? They were taken over by the bank. The bank now owns those items. But in addition, they also own all of the money that you'd been paying in for those items all that time. You start over and go back to square one. And how do you do it? A lot of times you'll do it through bankruptcy. Well, we better strike that because the law just changed on that one too. Now what they've done, literally as of, I believe, yesterday, signed into law the fact that we won't be able to get out that easy now. So now if you've got a situation where you're in trouble, you just lost that job due to a downsizing, and the only way out for you might be bankruptcy, you may not be allowed to file for bankruptcy.
And, of course, that's no business of the federal government. They should never have been allowed to pass a law outlawing bankruptcy or making it so much more difficult. That is a matter for the state and for the local government. That is not a matter for the federal government. But, you see, the people who really run things know exactly what's going to happen. They know that large numbers of people are going to go bankrupt, and they're going to be put into wage slavery. This is a way of doing it. Many of these people will never get out of debt. They will have exorbitant interest rates to pay, and they'll never be able to make enough to do more than simply pay the interest on their debt. And the people who've been foolish enough to get themselves head over heels in debt are facing financial destruction and really, for all intents and purposes, indentured slavery. And people don't understand that this has happened time and time and time again. We have a book we carry called The Coming Battle. It was written in 1891 by a man who was observing the economy and had seen this same cycle enacted over and over and over again during the 19th century. And he talked about this coming battle for the freedom of the American people against the financiers who controlled the monetary system and created booms, and then everybody went into debt. And then, as Michael said, they pulled out the rug, and the wealth of the country went from weak hands to strong hands. And each time we go into an economic recession, and we're going into one now, why, of course, the poor get poorer and the rich get richer. And that's the way the game is played. I believe in the free enterprise system, but I do not believe in a fiat money system which gives a favored few the ability to create money out of nothing and, of course, enslave the masses.
And, you know, you bring in the very beginning, you mentioned, of course, Alan Greenspan, or Greenspeak, depending on your daily mood. making the comments today. And, you know, here we have that same situation where you have this guy, a gentleman who is just basically the chairman of a company, who steps up, makes a statement, and controls the economies of the entire world for the day. One man making one statement. Presidents of entire nations can get up and speak for hours and not have that kind of a change occur. One guy who runs one company can stand up and make one statement, and bang, you can see the entire economy change right before your eyes globally. That is an incredible amount of power. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. I'll tell you what I'd like to see out of Alan Greenspan. I would like to see him with one of those sandwich boards as he gets up to speak. And as he does, he points to the sandwich board where the quote that he uttered says, "In the absence of the gold standard, there's no way to protect your savings from confiscation through inflation. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the hidden confiscation of wealth, and gold is the only thing that stands in the way of this insidious process." Okay. I would love to see him make that comment today, but of course he made it in the 60s, long before he was chairman of Federal Reserve.
In fact, if any of you would like to see that quotation, you can go to my website, radioliberty.com, and actually it is in our August 2004 newsletter, where we simply quote what Alan Greenspan said, and he said exactly that. He knew exactly at that time what the future held. In the absence of the gold standard, he said, "There is no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. There is no safe store of value. If there were, the government would have to make its holding illegal, as was done in the case of gold. The financial policy of the welfare state requires that there be no way for the owners of wealth to protect themselves. This is the shabby secret of the welfare state's tirades against gold. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the confiscation of wealth." Alan Greenspan, 1966. That is, of course, the front page of my August 2004 newsletter. You can get it at RadioLiberty.com, or if you're out there in the listening audience listening to us, we'll be glad to send you a free copy of that. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. But then Michael Trudeau, our guest from Colonial Resources tonight, has a lot of great information and packets that you'll send out too, won't you, Michael?
Absolutely. I'm happy to do it.
Well, why don't you tell them a little bit how to get in touch with you and get
sure.
that information?
Absolutely. One of the things that we can do certainly is give you tremendous amounts of information about what Stan and I are talking about this evening, about the Federal Reserve, how they're manipulating you, how they're stealing your money, and, of course, what you can do to stop that, how you can protect yourself financially. We'll send packets of information on this subject absolutely free of charge to anybody who calls. The number is toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. Again, that's 800-685-4042. And, you know, we were talking about with the Federal Reserve aspect is this aspect that we are valued as a nation by a set amount of money. And when you hear the government, or rather the Fed, I should say, speak up and say, "Hey, this is how much money we own," that's based on how much gold this country is holding.
Well, the thing is that we have a fiat money system. A fiat money system made up of paper money, most of it is bank transactions. There isn't even any real money there. It's all imaginary. It's sort of like the Social Security Fund, which is made up of IOUs based upon the government's willingness to pay them. The only trouble is the government doesn't have any money to pay them with. The only money the government has is what it takes from us by taxes, what it could borrow from other countries, or from the people here, or of course what it can print, and by so doing it inflates the value of the currency, and of course an invisible tax on everybody's holdings. We'll be back in just a moment with Michael. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Michael Trudeau of Colonial Resources, and we're talking really about what's going on behind the scenes. And those of you who've listened regularly will remember some months ago when we quoted Stephen Rhodes. Now, for those of you who don't know who Stephen Rhodes is, he's one of the more astute observers. He is the senior economist for Morgan Stanley and Company. Certainly no slouch. A man who has been observing things for many, many years. And he gave a private talk to a group of financiers, maybe it was, 4, 5, 6 months ago, at which he said that America has a 90% chance of having a financial Armageddon. He didn't know when it was going to come. He said, you know, we might be able to put it off for a time, maybe a 30% chance we could put it off for a time and muddle along. But sooner or later, the whole house of cards was going to come down, at least a 90% chance of that happening. And recently, within the last 10 days, Paul Volcker has said essentially the same thing. They were skating on thin ice, that a problem could be solved, but we weren't going to. And then his comment was, he quoted a gentleman who'd said, what needs to be done usually is not until it's too late. And then he says, I hope that will not be the epitaph for America. Here's the man, former chairman of the Federal Reserve System, one of the designers of this whole world monetary system. I think the real plan is to take us into a cashless society, and the process destroying the savings, the pensions, the annuities, the bank deposits, the bonds, the value of everything that everybody has here that is denominated in money. What are your thoughts, Michael?
Well, my thoughts are exactly the same. I want to mention also that Stephen Roche, you brought up Morgan Stanley, his boss, Byron Weir, also came out recently and made the prediction that he expected gold to break $500 an ounce by the end of the year. And I have to agree with that statement based on current economic workings, if you will. The thing that I find so interesting about all of this is that when we look to one aspect of gold and paper and the Federal Reserve and the central banking cartel, it's this. These individuals convinced us, and I like to use the word convinced us because it starts C-O-N. They convinced us that what we needed to do was to give up the actual real wealth, which was the physical possession gold. And what I mean by real wealth is this is a money that's valued as a money globally. There's no place on the planet that does not value gold as money and will not readily exchange your gold for their goods and services. This is the currency of the world and has been for 5,000 years. This group of con artists, though, this small group, convinced America, the whole nation, single-handedly, to give up all of that wealth and give it to them in their possession, and that we would in return hold pieces of paper that represented the wealth. So they're holding our wealth, and we're holding their paper that represents this wealth. One of the things that I did a long time ago was began to switch that around. I began to divest myself from some of that paper and get the physical wealth back. I now own that gold in physical possession. It's real money. And they're holding some of that paper that represented wealth for me. Now it represents wealth for them.
Well, of course, it doesn't really represent wealth at all. It really it is totally fraudulent. And you know, a very wise man, I don't know if you ever read, do you ever read Richard Marbury?
Yes, absolutely. I've been reading that newsletter for years and years and years.
Well, this is really one of the more interesting newsletters. And he made a remark recently, which I thought was really so important. It helps to have something very, very simple to think about. And he said, in times of stable money, why you want to, be fully invested in speculations. However, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Michael Trudeau. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 831-464-8295. And that's 831-464-8295. And, of course, as we see prices of oil going up, you must understand that a large part of the increase in the price of oil is not really that the oil is being increasing in price throughout the world. It is a reflection of the fall of the American dollar, but they can't tell the American people that. And as you see the price of gold and silver having gone up here over the last couple of years, that's not really because their price has gone up in reference to European currencies or the Swiss francs, but simply the dollar has gone down too far. Now, I think that the time will come when gold and silver will increase. That is when the cartel that is manipulating their price, illegally manipulating the price, loses control. But that time is not yet here. However, we were just talking before we came back about a man named Richard Mayberry, who writes a fascinating newsletter. One of the more astute observers, there's probably four or five people I really put a great deal of credence in. And Richard Mayberry was saying, look, when you have a fiat money system, and you have a stable fiat money system, in other words, when the central banks are managing the money properly, And they've created this opportunity for great expansion of the money supply, but never so much that you have runaway inflation or you destroy the value of the currency. Then this is the time to be invested, and invested in all sorts of speculative stocks, because there's a great opportunity for tremendous financial advantage. However, when you get into a situation where you have an unstable currency situation, such as we have today, where, of course, the value of money is beginning to decrease and decrease rapidly, why, if you stay with money, you'll simply be wiped out. And his advice is, this is the time when you want to be in things. In other words, whatever those things would be, you want to be in things that will hold value. Because when money is, the value of paper money is destroyed, as it always is sooner or later in every cycle, why, you want to be in things that are... And let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Mike? Mike, are you there?
Yeah, I stand.
Go ahead.
Hi, do we have a decent connection? I thought I heard some noise.
No, you're doing fine.
Okay. I want to ask about something that I think might be an extremely insidious hoax that's been put on us financially. It has to do with retirement accounts and pension accounts, pension funds and things, where people, you know, build their fund up for a number of years and then say they want to draw some money out of it for a reason. And instead of actually drawing the money out, the way the whole thing is arranged is that they can borrow against it. You're tracking with me, you know the kind of thing.
Right, I know what you're talking about. I'm sure Michael does. Go ahead.
So then what it seems like is going to happen is that those funds are just going to disappear. And then the people are stuck holding that loan and needing to make payments on it. So they get the double whammy. They've been forced into a position in the first place of having to borrow against their own money and then paying interest on against their own money for the sake of the tax shelter, maintaining the tax shelter, I suppose, and then they're stuck in the end with nothing but debt.
Well, and I mean, you think about this for just 1 minute from this perspective. What you're saying is, okay, I've got my retirement fund here, my 401k, and it's my retirement fund. What I'm going to do is I'm going to now borrow against my retirement fund and hope everything works out.
Yeah.
Imagine for a minute if Social Security was not in the dire straits it was, and citizens were allowed to borrow from their accounts in Social Security. Imagine where we would be within a decade.
Yeah.
We would be upside down. So, yeah, I agree. It's absolutely hideous that you're even allowed to do it that way. I mean, if that's the case, why don't you take that cash then, and instead of investing it in a 401k, simply invest it in a bank account at home?
Right. So yeah. You're thinking that the scenario that I'm proposing is a likely way that things could play out then, right?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the 401k situation at all. I've cashed out of my own. I've talked my wife into cashing out of hers, and anybody who will listen to me, I've done the same. I mean, you know, depending on your own personal situation, a 401k is not a very smart way to own money for your future.
Yeah,
neither is an IRA, for that matter.
So you're talking about cashing out and taking the hit on the tax?
Well, if you look at it from this perspective for a minute, Mike, generally speaking, Good Morning America, within the last month, it was about a month ago, came out and said the dollar's lost 25% of its buying power in the last 2 years. So now equate that to annually, and you can go back further than 2 years, but equate it to annually, it's about 12.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So now if in your 401k you're making 12.5% annually, you're fine. If you're not, then you're losing money.
Yeah, so
and at that point, if you cash out of that 401k, take your hit and then begin to correct that over time. It will obviously correct itself, and you won't have lost that money.
Right. We're going to have to hold you right there, Mike.
Okay.
You stick on the line, and Michael, you stick on the line too, and we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty on the line with us from back there in, I guess, what is it, Minneapolis where you are? Where
yep,
are you?
I'm actually in the suburb of Minneapolis, you bet.
Okay, fine. In Minneapolis, we've got Michael Trudeau, and from Santa Cruz, we've got Michael, a good personal friend of ours, asking about the 401k and these various retirement funds. Anything else you want to say, Michael?
Well, it's just interesting the way the government is able to sucker people into creating, you know, what they call a tax shelter, and it seems logical. It seems a good way to go, and then time is going to tell, isn't it?
Well, let me share a personal experience with you. I had one of these insurance. I guess it was a defined benefits program. It was, you know, I was a physician and making a fairly good sum of money, and I began saving for my retirement and put money into this fund, and then of course we bought property with it. The property did very well. And so we were looking at a considerable appreciation of the value of my holdings, and then they changed the laws. And suddenly they were going to have something called a success tax, and it was going to be a whopping big tax, and of course it was going to be invoked in a very, very short period of time. And then of course when you cashed out, you're going to have to pay a success tax, a tax on the money that you had actually made, in addition to the regular tax on that money. So I tried getting hold of somebody from the IRS to understand what the implications of everything was. And I must have spent days trying to find somebody in the IRS who I could really talk to. And I finally got hold of a gentleman who was actually in charge of the pension fund at the IRS here in the western part of the United States. He was a nice fellow. I think he was an honest man. And we chatted back and forth. And finally he said to me, he said to Stan, and we were on a first name basis by that time, he says, Stan, I'm in charge of the IRS and the pension fund and all the application of the new laws. He said, I don't understand these laws. There's no way you can understand these laws. If I were you, I would get out, I would pay my taxes, and get out now. And the longer you wait, the more you're going to lose. Which I took his advice. It was very expensive to cash out of my pension fund.
Sure.
It was the smartest thing I ever did.
And I agree. It's a very intelligent thing. And, you know, one of the things that, again, we touch on is that when we talk about that 25% decline that I'd mentioned for Michael, is this. This is how you have to kind of focus on this 25% number for a minute, because it's been a two-year period of time. That means that just 2 years ago, if $100 were to buy you four bags of groceries, which I know it doesn't, but if it did, hypothetically, $100 buys you four bags of groceries 2 years ago. Today, the same $100 only buys you three bags of groceries.
Hold that thought for just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Okay, Dr. Stan back here. I'm Michael Trudeau, and of course, Michael on the line from Santa Cruz. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, they called that a success tax.
Right. This was another tax. Because the property I had bought had accumulated a great deal, had increased in value, and they were going to tax me some fantastic amount of money because I'd made money on my investments, more than the 5% they were going to allow me to make.
So they're taxing success.
Right. They call
it should have been referred to as a parasitic leech tax.
But remember, government never has enough money. They're always going to find another means of getting it away from you. That's why you don't want to put it into an account that they can control, believe me. And as they get into more and more trouble, they're going to go after the money and the pension funds. They're going to get every bit of money that they can get from people.
And
there's nothing new about this. They did it back in the times of our Lord. They did it back during the early years of this country, and they will do it today because government has to have money so that they can buy the support of the voters and pay off the politicians.
It's not a fun scenario, especially when you take a look at exactly where this is heading. You touched on it, Stan, when you brought in the cashless society aspect. Wonder what would happen if people really, really took the moment and realized that, hey, all of the barcodes that are on most of the products, and we've discussed this before in the program, but all of the barcodes that are on all these products have a hidden 666 on it. And that's something that you can see on just about, I mean, you can go to websites and find it all over the place. I can send material out on it to show people, you know, so they can find it themselves. But the part that is interesting is not so much that, but the fact that in 1999, an actual patent was issued by the United States for a barcode tattoo that would go on an individual. And this is what it said. I got this right off the website, by the way, from the United States Patent Office. Method for verifying human identity during electronic sales transactions. A method will be presented for facilitating sales transactions by electronic media. A barcode or a design tattooed on an individual. Before the sales transaction can be consummated, the tattoo is scanned with a scanner. Characteristics about the scanned tattoo are compared to characteristics about other tattoos stored on a computer database in order to verify the identity of the buyer. Once verified, the seller can authorize at that point to debit the buyer's electronic bank account in order to consummate the transaction. Now remember, that is a tattooed barcode that will go right on your body, somewhere on your person. Now imagine for a minute if all the barcodes have this hidden 666 that can be shown to anybody, and you're offered at some point in the future a tattooable barcode on your hand so that you can continue to buy and sell things. And then you come to the passage, of course, Revelation 13:16, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name.
And that number, that name is 666, right?
So we have a hidden 666 on the barcodes. There's a patent that's been granted for a barcode tattoo so that we can still buy and sell things. And there's the passage from the book of Revelation that says you won't be able to buy or sell anything unless you've got the mark on your hand.
Okay, anything else, Mike?
Well, back to the discussion about the Federal Reserve Act when that was put through on...
1913.
That was real close to Christmas, you were saying, when most of Congress was gone. You're talking about the Senate?
Pretty slick, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, do you have any record of who those members of the Senate were that stayed around long enough to vote?
Yeah, actually, I don't have it right here with me. I could probably do it again. I did some research quite a while back on that one, and yeah, I did have all the individuals of Congress, who the TNT Club was, and so on. Mike, have you ever seen the list of who it is that actually owns the Federal Reserve? The families who are,
well,
you know, shareholders, if you will, in the bank?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to have to go to a bell calling from Coeur d'Alene. Anything else, Mike?
Well, anyway, I can get those names of who voted.
Right. Why don't you, why don't you go ahead and get your telephone number out, Michael?
Sure, Mike. And if you want a copy of that, just call and ask.
Okay.
It's toll-free 1-800-685-4042.
Okay, fine. Thanks so very much, Mike. And let's go to Bill calling from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Hi, Bill from Coeur d'Alene.
Hi, good evening, Stan. Great show again. Michael, I have a comment and two questions. It appears that we're seeing almost possibly an unprecedented war on the middle class. We're being hit from every conceivable direction by the policies that are being instituted. The first question is, as you were talking about the plunge protection team, there seems to be an agenda to keep the price of gold and silver down, i.e. the example between the difference in price between platinum, that usually is much closer than it is.
Sure it is, yeah.
Than it is today.
But that's a different, that's not the plunge protection team. That's another organization that's doing that. But be that as it may, it's essentially the same thing.
Right.
Plunge protection team is primarily for the stock market. It's certainly some of the large gold producers and some of the large banks that are artificially keeping the price of silver and gold down because they don't want us anything to trade with that has intrinsic value. And if they can control the price of gold and silver and keep them from being where they should be with a free and open market, then our only alternative is to use their phony money.
Right. And in other words, keep everybody in the stock market, for if gold and silver don't go through the roof, people may leave the stock market and start investing in the metals.
Which is happening right now in mass. And the reason I know that simply, Bill, is just by the volume of business that we're doing that has increased dramatically over the last few years. So you can see that people are definitely, and I'm talking to these people too, so I mean you can certainly see that there's been a shift in the way that the general Joe public is seeing things. People are definitely getting scared.
At least the people who are listening to programs like
there
this
you go.
And are getting some education. So go ahead.
My last part of my question is, I believe that you have to try to do everything you can to preserve, you know, what you've worked all your life for. But I cannot believe that the policies of the government, that there's not going to be a hook at some point, whether it's even an executive order, to restrict our ability to own metals possible.
Oh, absolutely.
It's
executive Order 6102 from 1933 did the exact same thing. They walked in and said, you can't own gold. We need it because of the emergency banking situation. We're taking all of the gold. You can't own it anymore. You can only own the collector's coins now, but the bullion is now ours. Turn it over, and we're going to give the official government gold price. And the same thing will probably happen down the line. The question would come at that point, where are we economically? Where are we politically? Where are we socially? If they try to step in and say, okay, we're going to take away the gold again, I highly doubt that you're going to get the majority of the populace to say, okay, let me just cough some more of it up. We've already learned from that mistake the first time they took the gold from us and gave us paper.
And back then, it was traded currency.
Absolutely.
But then, of course, it had a gold backing. You know, when they took the paper, the gold away from the people, they gave them notes where it had a gold backing, although we couldn't own the gold. Anybody else in the world could own the gold.
Right, and the official government gold price was changed on that day as well, from $20 an ounce to $35 an ounce.
Right.
So that, even though they gave us that paper with the gold backing on it, we lost out on about a $15 per ounce markup there, in addition to the fact that, of course, Roosevelt and his cronies probably had hordes and hordes of those collectible coins in trunks ready to be sold right after the confiscation was enacted.
Anything else you want to say there, Bill?
Well, I guess in closing, I assume that that you're saying, besides investing in the metals, to have, you know, whatever assets you have and any other tangibles, be it
keep
tools,
it physical,
food or a hand tool or anything
right.
else?
Right, absolutely. And, you know, would I recommend that people start jumping on property right now? Absolutely not, because that's not a tangible that I would, at this point, say you should invest money into.
And because I believe we're in the middle of a housing bubble. They have created tremendous liquidity by running up the price of property so fast. And they've made these loans so very, very easy.
Right.
You know, you get them with an adjustable rate mortgage, you know, a 3 or 4%, isn't that wonderful? And of course, you can go out and borrow money on your property because it's gone up so much in value. But it's all, you know, symbolism over substance. There's nothing behind it.
Right. And one thing that Bill brought up, of course, about that confiscation aspect, or if they make it illegal for us to own gold or anything like that, I want to point this out. They've made it illegal for us to own cocaine now, Bill, but you can get it on any street corner in America. Now, I won't work and deal in cocaine, Bill, but if I get to a point where I'm bartering for food and goods with my gold and silver and the government says I can't do that anymore, I'll be willing to break that law. So I'll still trade my gold with you, Bill, at that point in time.
One last quick question, please.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Over the weekend on a financial channel, I had heard that an agency of the federal government was going to institute a policy with the banks where they're going to be doubling the minimum due, getting the banks to double the minimum amount due on their credit cards. Have you heard anything like that?
I have not heard anything about it.
No, I haven't either. But, you know, of course, they're going to, of course, to raise interest. You know, if you read the Bible, why usury, charging interest for money, was outlawed. It was against God's law. And it's still against God's law in the Muslim world. But, of course, if you read my August 2004 and September 2004 newsletters, we'll tell you who it was that really began to push usury into Christian civilization. Hey, thanks so much. Let's go to Jim calling from Missouri. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Good evening.
Have a question or comment?
Yes, sir. First, just in passing, your story about the possibility that those folks had hoarded gold coins before they outlawed them reminded me of President Kennedy sending P.R. Salinger out to get him some Cuban cigars the night before he outlawed them.
Very good analogy.
Although that's different. But
sure, but it's still a good analogy because it points out the same mentality.
I have had exposure to a financial planner. I don't know what you'd call him. He gives seminars, mostly to doctors. And he recommends that you live well within your means, get out of debt, and the investment that he has always recommended, or at least for primarily, is tax-free municipal bonds.
All right, do you want to comment on that, Michael?
Well, I mean, here's the first thing I'd say about that. The you know, a financial planner generally, or a financial advisor, is generally going to be recommending things that he can make a commission off of as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're not going to see a financial planner, you know, say, hey, look, it's a really good idea that you own, you know, financial positions in gold. I've talked to so many individuals who said, well, you know, my financial planner said this or my financial planner said that, and I always come back with this question. Well, let me ask you something about that. Did your financial planner tell you you should have bought gold 3 years ago? Because we didn't, I'd fire them.
Well,
that's
should
an 80% increase in 3 years while the dollar declined 37%.
How much an increase?
80%.
I will tell you that it's a management firm. It's not a, you know, he doesn't sell anything other than his
service.
Right. He doesn't sell bonds.
Well, I would point out, Jim, that if you are in anything that is in a bond, anything that is denominated, in dollars, why, you've lost, over the last 5 years, at least about 50% of the value of those dollars. So those dollars are down to half what they were as far as their purchasing power internationally.
Right, those munis would have to be paying you no less than 12.5% annually for you to break even.
Not many of those around.
Not that I'm aware of.
So, the remainder of what he said.
What else did he say?
Just to live well within your means.
That part is no question about that. Getting
get out
of debt
is
always good advice.
As much as you can.
Sure.
Don't go toy crazy.
It's a problem, though, because, the mentality of the citizen here is, like I say, man, when things are going really great, hey, let's overextend ourselves. Why not? I mean, the times are great, and they're never going to get bad. It's just the human nature. So we'll do that and set ourselves out at that point to the whim of what the Fed decides they want to do with us.
Well, I think it was Ludwig von Mises, who was the head of the Austrian School of Economics, said that bonds are certificates of guaranteed confiscation. So, if you want to be in bonds, fine. But if our currency takes a tailspin, which I believe it's going to do, why, you will lose most of what you have.
Which is actually occurring as we speak.
So all the rest of it is good. It's just that one...
Right. It's what you do with your money. Certainly nobody would say that you should be in debt. No one would say you should be buying toys. But get out and get what you invest in is what's important. And what you want to do is diversify, because you want at least to be able to have something that you can fall back on. Hey, we're out of time, but thanks so very much for calling. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
No, sir. That's okay. I appreciate your help.
God bless. Thanks very much. And Michael, let's get out your telephone number and your address again. So people
sure. And just one parting comment that I want to make again is, with a decline of a dollar of 25% in the last 2 years, you need to own gold in the beginning just for the sake of protecting the decline of the dollar. Should we be forced into a cashless society, and you don't want to be a member of that cashless society, you'll use your gold coins at that point to step outside of that cashless society, and you'll be able to barter with like-minded citizens just like myself, just like the callers today, and just like Dr. Stan. So again, it's the idea that you should own some metals. You shouldn't sell everything you own to buy metals. That would be ridiculous. As Stan pointed out, diversification is the key. Own some, because it makes a great insurance policy for your family. Okay. I can give you a lot more information, detailed recommendations on that, and how you can do it. And all you have to do is call toll-free and ask for it. It's simple. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042. Or you can also visit our website, which is simply colonialresources.com.
Okay, and let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack.
Hi there, Jack.
1913. Oh, hold. Speak up now.
Sure. Every Congress and president that has been involved in reauthorizing the Federal Reserve Act, I think that occurs periodically, doesn't it?
I think it's permanent until it has to be resolved.
Yes, correct. And what is happening, though, on occasion is you do have people who go up and they try to repeal the act of the Federal Reserve 1913 Act.
Okay, now... How much of what has transpired with respect to the executive order of FDR, I think it was March of 33?
Yes, 6102.
Wasn't that in response to the bankruptcy of the corporate United States when he outlawed private ownership of gold as money?
No, I don't believe so. I believe that what actually occurred there, that was basically a handful of elitist fat cats who are foreigners who owned the central banking cartel, who put some muscle down and said, hey, pal, this is what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, you
we need the money.
You mentioned loans earlier, and there's a group that I'd like you to check out sometime, Michael. It's called theawaregroup.com.
Somebody told me about that too, and I had written it down somewhere, and you just reminded me of it, so I'm going to write it down again and make an attempt to do it.
Yeah, theawaregroup.com, they go into the fact that whenever any kind of a mortgage loan or anything is initiated, the loan agreement is a commercial agreement that institution then sells to an investor at interest, and they actually access with the contracting party's social security number, a treasury direct account, and there's an electronic transfer of funds, so the bank is not loaning their money, they're loaning the money from the individual
right.
contractor's PDA.
Well, I think so many of these, of course, go through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and then, of course, then they lend them out or bundle them together and give them to private investors. Hey, we're out of time, but thanks very much for calling, Jack.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Michael Trudeau. And Michael, when people call you, will they get some sort of a free report, or what will they get?
Absolutely. We'll send out information to anybody that calls, and obviously what we'll do is give them information about the cashless society and about the Federal Reserve, because the bottom line to this is we are being systematically blinded as we are being literally pillaged by a handful of elitist bankers. And bottom line to that is we don't have to continue to let it occur. You have to stand up and say, I'm not going to take this by lying down. I'm going to stand up and fight. And what I mean by fight is you don't necessarily have to run up and you know, start a physical war. You have to fight by saying, I'm not going to allow you to continue to do this to me. I'm going to divest some of that paper and put this into gold and sit on it. Or I'm going to divest some of that paper into some property or into some physical possessions. And again, now I've got the wealth physically with me instead of you holding it for me.
I know somebody had called in and wanted to know if you felt that the price of property on the East Coast and West Coast, this explosion in the price is really sort of a bubble that's going to burst one of these days.
Sure it is. There's no question about that. And one of the things that you look at as far as one of these days is what would take for that to happen. Well, what we've got right now is the Fed saying, gee, we really got to start raising these interest rates. Think about the people who have these adjustable rate mortgages who max themselves out to the hilt and are right there at the cusp of being able to afford that mortgage, and that interest rate goes up and they've got an adjustable arm. Bang, they are out of a house. And at that point, that housing bubble begins to collapse because people can't buy them. During a negative economy, who's buying houses? No one will be. And at that point, you'll see those prices absolutely collapse. It'll be a free fall.
And of course, this is what we saw in Japan over there.
Yes.
And property values dropped about 90%. And the value of their stock market dropped at about 90%. And for 15 years, what was once the greatest and most vibrant economy of all time has been in the doldrums. Why? Because people have lost confidence in the system. I mean, the people who were invested in the stocks and invested in property, always with the expectation of it continuing going up, and they were going to be fabulously rich. Why, of course, they suddenly realized it was all a lie. And so many of the people who invested their entire savings in the stock market and in property lost it all, which is why now, of course, they're just not investing. Well, we're out of time, Michael. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Yeah, Japan at that point was one of the strongest economies in the world. What makes anybody think ours will be different than that? If we see a 90% drop on the price of a house, imagine a $100,000 home selling for $10,000 next year, and it could happen. At that point, it's a simple matter of saying, hey, if I buy $10,000 worth of gold coins today and liquidate those next year, I can buy that guy's house for $10,000. Now imagine that for a minute. Again, if you want any of these free reports, toll free, 1-800-685-4042.
God bless you. We're out of time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just comment. We do carry a book. It's actually published by Paul and Lorraine Walter, who's good friends of ours. But this is a book that was written back in 1891. It's called The Coming Battle. And it is a very important book because it tells you what had happened during the 19th century. And of course, there's nothing new under the sun. It's like deja vu all over again. They played this scam over and over and over again. The Coming Battle will give you real insight into understanding what's happened in the past, because if you don't understand the past, you certainly can't understand what's happening today or what's going to happen tomorrow. The other books you need to get, Creature from Jekyll Island, if you haven't read it, why you must, and of course, then The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, written by Professor Anthony Sutton, Gold for Survival, Gold for Investment. Now, these are actually three books that he had written, Professor Sutton had written. And then, of course, the Fiat Money Inflation in France. Those books are what you really need to understand what's going on. That is The Coming Battle, The Creature from Jekyll Island, the story of the secret meetings that were held to con the American people into believing that the Federal Reserve System had something to do with the federal government. The Federal Reserve Conspiracy is a short little easy-to-read book by Professor Sutton. Gold for Investment by Professor Sutton. Gold for Survival by Professor Sutton. And then The Fiat Money Inflation in France, written by Andrew Dickinson White, who was the founder of Cornell University. It was written well over 100 years ago about an event that took place well over 200 years ago. But you need to understand what happened in France in 1789 to understand what's happening in America today, because at that time the stock market was booming and everybody was getting rich. But with that came the breakdown of morality and the breakdown of marriage and the loss of religious conviction and thought. And of course, you know what happened eventually, of course, as always happens with a democracy. Why they went into a dictatorship. For as Alexander Tyler had said back in 1787, democracies are temporary forms of government. They last only until the people find they can vote themselves into the largest of the public treasury. The people vote for the politicians who promise to give them the most. The country goes bankrupt and is followed by a dictatorship. Ladies and gentlemen, understand what Alexander Tyler said. Benefit from his wisdom. And make your preparations, because we may not be able to change what's happening, because behind this move towards the dictatorship in America are powerful spiritual forces. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. Those of you who bought the cases, incidentally, they will be going out next week, but you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the video or the audio tape or all of them together in the Brotherhood of Darkness special. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Pull down my August, September, and October newsletters. And you need to read them and reread them and check out the documentation and see what Warren Buffett is doing. See what George Soros is doing. See what Alan Greenspan really thinks. It's all there. August, September, and October, 2004 newsletters. And then make your plans accordingly. And then, of course, we suggest that you listen to our programs there on the Internet. And you can listen to them there live 3 hours a day, and then link to the other networks that carry our programs, the Genesis Network, the American Freedom Network, why we suggest that you pull down the list of the books and the videos and the audio tapes we have and even some of the items that we carry that do help us to stay on the air. Give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We're having to add another shortwave network for our afternoon program because the one we have is just not reaching so many people in the Northeast. We will be going on WWCR beginning the 1st of May, and you'll be able to hear our afternoon program on one of two shortwave networks. But we would appreciate your help in maintaining that. And then please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us, hopefully on the line very, very soon, Andrew Skousen, and he, of course, is Joel Skousen's son, one of his sons, and he's going to be filling in with us for a while Joel is away, and we're going to evaluate the World Affairs Brief. And, of course, if you do not read World Affairs Brief every day, why, you're missing out on a unique opportunity. First thing I do, and you've heard me say this before, first thing I do, though, in the morning, after I've had my coffee and done my early morning program, is I check the market. Then, of course, I check my emails, and then I go to World Affairs Brief, www.worldaffairsbrief.com. And you can go down their list of items, and they check the India Times and the Asia Times and the Southeast Asia Times and News with Views and Rents. And they check so many of the major websites to get the latest information. And then they list it with a little short summary of what it's all about. And so you don't have to go searching the web. They tell you most of the major items you want to know on the daily basis, and that's why you want to do it every morning. You don't want to get behind on that anymore. You want to get behind on your emails. And with that as a background, Andrew Skousen, thank you so very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan. Good to be with you.
Well, tell us what we're going to talk about this evening.
Well, I thought we'd touch briefly on Venezuela, and then talk maybe a little bit at length about the provisions in the Patriot Act and about various parts of it that are about to sunset. And then if we have time, we can talk a little bit about the economy and maybe get into some of the issues with Iran and there's just quite a few stories here this week. We'll just have to see what we can do.
All right, fine. Well, let's start at the beginning. Let's go into Venezuela. What's happening in Hugo Chavez's country?
Well, as many of the listeners probably know, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld has been making quite a few trips around, as has Condoleezza Rice, and both of them have expressed a public concern about Hugo Chavez and the country of Venezuela. Recently, they have purchased 100,000 AK-47 assault rifles from Russia and civil fighter aircraft from Brazil. Probably the sharpest public exchange came in a joint press conference with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov with Condoleezza Rice, where Ms. Rice said, quote, "We have made it very clear to the Russian government our concerns about certain arms sales in Latin America, particularly Venezuela." What's interesting about this is how Venezuela responds and has been responding in the past. They've created quite an interesting play off of all of this. And basically it's a perfect example of how the dialectic works. Basically, what they're doing is they're creating a fake enemy, and then using that as an excuse to get a whole lot done politically that they otherwise couldn't get done.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back in just a moment with Andrew Skousen as we'll discuss this whole concept of the dialectics. Hegel's concept has been used to advance socialism for many centuries. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Andrew Skousen. And we're talking about what's going on in Central America. And for the people out there who do not know, why there was a man named Hegel. And he was a German philosopher. And Karl Marx patterned his concept of dialectical materialism based upon at least the dialectics of Hegel. And dialectics is where you have a force and a counterforce, and they're in constant conflict, a thesis and an antithesis, as it were. And out of the conflict between the two forces, the one the thesis, the other the antithesis, comes the new synthesis. In other words, with conflict, you can get change. And if you don't have any conflict and people don't believe the conflict is going on, they're not going to go along with the dramatic changes in society. But then, of course, once you have those changes, you need another conflict so that you can continue. And we see this played out over and over again here with the homosexual marches on one side and the Christians objecting on the other. And, of course, it is all for perception. And, of course, at each step, why, of course, the agenda of immorality continues to advance. And here, certainly in Central America, the cause of tyranny advances. So pick up the story there, Andrew.
Yeah, Dr. Stan, that was a very good summary. Basically, yeah, that's you create an enemy, and because of that, you declare an emergency. And in the case of Venezuela, when no emergency appears, you can declare your methods as correct and fruitful. There was a very interesting article by Michael Rowan, who wrote this article for a South American newspaper called El Universal, and basically he comments about the actions of the government in the past months and sort of summarizes it into a very interesting op-ed piece. And what he says is that the Venezuelan government is preparing for war, and the enemy that they're saying is the United States, which according to them, it covets Venezuela's oil. And they're using the example of Iraq as proof that America is a warmongering nation out to conquer oil assets. And they declare that all statements to the contrary by the White House and the Pentagon and the State Department are exactly proof of their opposite intentions. And they claim that the United States has tried and failed to assassinate the Venezuelan president, destroy his peaceful and democratic revolutions, etc. And all of these hints keep popping up in the media and in press releases. And
hold that thought for just a moment.
All right.
Well, Dr. Stan, and Andrew is commenting on an article that appears in the South American newspaper saying that Chavez says that the Americans are going to threaten to invade his country, and therefore he has to, of course, to become more autocratic. He has to get more in the way of weapons. He has to prepare his people for the coming American attack. And then, of course, if the attack doesn't come, he can say, see, well, that's because we were strengthened. But, of course, in the process, he's using the threat of America to justify taking away the freedom from the Venezuelan people, just as here in the United States, I might comment, it is the fear of Osama bin Laden, who's over there in a cave, the master manipulator, manipulating al-Qaeda all throughout the world. That's why we've got to take away the freedom from the American population, because of Osama bin Laden. And would that be sort of an analogy to what you're suggesting is going on in Central America? As Hugo Chavez points to America and says, oh, there's such a terrible threat, we've got to take away your freedom?
Yes, that's exactly what's happening, except that they're doing it to a smaller and perhaps a quicker scale in Venezuela. They're militarizing the society. They're curbing back on certain civil liberties and human rights, especially about so-called suspected collaborators, spies, and terrorists. But according to them, this is absolutely necessary. Every nation at war has to do these things. You know, private properties must be confiscated to prepare for economic survival, especially if it comes to, quote, a long, drawn-out siege, as Cuba has had to suffer. So, when the so-called imminent attack doesn't happen, they declare that democratization of life in Venezuela is a great success, that the country has taken the sufficient steps to keep this from happening. But rather than curb this progress, they declare that, in fact, more reserves, more military, more weapons are necessary. After all, why surrender a winning hand against the evil empire? Now, many of us may laugh at this and think, well, this is rather silly. Obviously, these people are going over the mark with this, and how silly to be fooled by such such comments and such media propaganda being published. Certainly, something like this couldn't happen back here in the United States. Definitely not. Well, with that in mind, let's switch gears and turn to the second story I'd like to talk about, which is the Patriot Act. You may know that this is actually a very similar thing to what's going on in Venezuela. It's a perfect example of dialectic. After the September 11th attacks, the mere mention of terrorism is enough to make people drop down and give up their civil liberties on the spot in return for safety and protection from who else but the all-powerful government. So what has happened is that some of the provisions of the Patriot Act were set up with certain time limits, what are called sunset provisions.
And these were some of the provisions that restricted our Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. And so these were sunset, and at a certain point in time, for instance, the end of the year 2005, these would be sunset. These would be removed from the bill unless they were reenacted by Congress. And the American Congress was stampeded into signing this legislation by the anthrax attack. And, of course, the anthrax attack, which nobody has ever been able to solve, and the only person who knew it was coming was Vice President Cheney, because he and his entire staff went on Cipro, a very dangerous antibiotic but specific for anthrax, on the very evening of September 11th. In other words, he knew the attack was coming. Otherwise, he never would have taken this specific antibiotic because it's potentially dangerous. It can actually rupture your Achilles tendon, your other tendons, because it's a fluoridated compound, and it has a toxic effect on the enzyme of the body. And yet, of course, the entire White House staff, or at least the Cheney part of the White House staff, started because they knew the anthrax attack was coming, but they didn't tell anybody else, and a couple of people died. And out of the fear that came with that, why Congress was willing to pass probably an act which should never have been called the Patriot Act. It should have been called the Unpatriotic Act or the Un-American Act, because it, of course, violated so many of the tenets of the Constitution. Would that be a fair statement, Andrew?
Yes, actually, that's a very good analysis. I surely appreciate your doctor background with these kinds of things. That's great.
You go ahead. Tell us about what's in there that is going to be sunsetted, or at least we hope is going to be sunsetted.
All right. Well, let's review briefly about the Patriot Act and bring to light a couple of points about it. Most people are under the impression that the purpose of the Patriot Act was to expand the powers of government to allow them to be able to track down terrorists and terrorist organizations. In fact, several of the Act's provisions can be used to gain information about Americans in the context of investigations.
I mean, Americans who are not terrorists, you're saying.
Right, who have no demonstrated link to terrorism. I should note that I'm quoting from an article written by Anita Ramasastry, who is a professor of law at the University of Washington School of Law in Seattle. She's written an excellent article about all of the different aspects of this, and I'm quoting from a couple of these. So there's a couple of interesting provisions about this. Specifically, as we get into this, there was before we have to realize a certain what the checks and balances were before the Patriot Act was enacted. Before the Patriot Act, the law struck a fine constitutional balance when it came to electronic surveillance. In 1978, there was an act established called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA. And this act established a court, known as the FISA Court, which had the power to issue secret warrants. Now, the purpose of these warrants was expressly laid out to only be to aid in intelligence gathering, with it being towards espionage and terrorism. Now, the statute in this act made it very clear that the purpose of FISA-warranted surveillance was solely to gather foreign intelligence, and that to procure such warrant, the government had to convince the court that there was probable cause that the surveillance target was a foreign power or agent of a foreign power. Now, contrast this with domestic criminal cases. Obviously, there's provisions for surveillance for domestic cases. Now, in domestic criminal cases, to get a communication or a search warrant, these had to be based on probable cause, cause enough to believe that a crime had been or was about to be committed. And a prosecutor would have to convince a federal judge that such probable cause existed, and then the warrant could be issued in these domestic federal cases. Now, there's a stark contrast between these two. And it's important to note that FISA, any time FISA authorized intelligence to be gathered, it was done in secret, so that the targets of FISA surveillance were never actually told or notified that they were spied on. Contrast this with domestic criminal defendants who actually, during their trial, get a copy of the warrant so that they can decide if it's worth challenging it under the Fourth Amendment, because it's a good second balance that there has to be probable cause. But anything issued under the FISA court, of course, you couldn't get access to these things, and you couldn't get you couldn't find out if that evidence was gathered without probable cause. Also, anytime something went to a FISA court, there wasn't a clear legal precedent with these courts. So, whereas most defense attorneys rely on the fact that there's a proper legal precedent and they can make objections whenever the court deviates from those things, these set precedents don't exist with the FISA court, and so it's much, much more difficult for anyone to put up any kind of defense during the proceedings of these courts.
But of course, under the Patriot Act, are these still FISA courts, or are they a separate type of court?
Patriot Act, from what I understand, they are still FISA courts. But what has been degraded is the defining line between what qualifies an act of search or a wiretap from being domestic related or gathering foreign intelligence.
I think one of the most significant things is, of course, the whole Patriot Act has to do with terrorism, but there's not one word in the entire Patriot Act about Islamic terrorism. And they've redefined what a terrorist is. A terrorist is anybody who wants to change our form of government. Now, that is so loosely construed, it could refer to you or I, who want to reclaim our constitutional system and take it away from the elitists who control it. They're the true terrorists in our country. They're the ones who want to change our form of government. But since they hold the reins of power, why, certainly the Patriot Act and their definition of terrorism could include anybody out there in the listening audience tonight. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Andrew Skousen. Andrew, from World Affairs Brief, please pick up the story from there.
Great. All right. Well, I was just about to talk about the fuzzing of the barrier between what qualified someone from having to go through all of the steps, of a government going through or a police agency going through all of the necessary steps to establish a warrant to investigate and gather information about people before the Patriot Act versus after the Patriot Act. Now, what the Patriot Act did is that it caused that in order to get a FISA warrant or a warrant to gather foreign intelligence, is that the purpose of the warrant did not have to be solely for intelligence gathering purposes. Now it only had to be, quote, a significant purpose, unquote, of FISA authorized surveillance. The result has been that not just CIA agents, but FBI agents as well, or even state police cooperating with the CIA and FBI, have the ability to tap into this this secret FISA source of warrants and use them for crimes that are only very minor related to actual proven terrorist links.
In fact, they really don't even have to have anything to do with terrorism. In fact, these laws have been used for many criminal activities that have nothing to do with that. Once this precedent is established, why law enforcement will use it and won't have to be hindered by these old-fashioned ideas of the Constitution, because after all, the law enforcement wants to get the bad guys, and so they are using the Patriot Act for things it was never designed for, things having nothing to do with terrorism. But of course, it's the law. Why shouldn't they use it? This is the same legislation that Bill Clinton tried to get through, and Bill Clinton couldn't get this through after the Oklahoma City bombing. So George Bush got it through, because what the American people have to understand is the leaders of both political parties want to do away with those outmoded protections of the Constitution that guarantee us our liberty. They have a different vision. The leaders of both political parties are dedicated to globalization. They're dedicated to the New World Order. They're dedicated to the New World Religion. They're dedicated to the destruction of national sovereignty. And they're both dedicated to this whole idea of perpetual war, to bring about perpetual peace. And so they're actually violating the very spirit of this law by applying these laws to non-terrorist activities. And where is the outcry? Well, I'll tell you, they keep denying it's happened, and then every time they get caught with their hand in the cookie jar, oh, well, those were bad guys. We had to get them anyway. But lots of times, I suspect, that they are using this when they aren't bad guys. Because many times we know that literally hundreds of people have been sent to death row in this country with fraudulent testimony and fraudulent evidence and perjured testimony, because prosecutors want to win cases, not necessarily enforce the law. Because as they said recently on the Law and Order television program, it isn't a perfect system, but it's the only system we've got, and we have to use it. And unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, when you give people who have no moral base power to enforce the law, can you be surprised when you have immoral laws and immoral... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Andrew Skousen here. So, Andrew, pick up the story. Andrew Skousen is here talking about the latest World Affairs Brief. So, and our telephone number, incidentally, if you'd like to call, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or out across America at 464-8295. So we're talking about the Patriot Act, and, of course, there are certain issues that are going to be coming up for being sunsetted. And, of course, that means that they will cease to be the law of this land unless they are reintroduced and passed by Congress. But the Clinton administration and the Bush administration both want to keep those laws in place because they want to use them to get around the constitutional restrictions. There's always the battle between those who would have total power and those who want to limit the power of government, of course, so we can be free. Go ahead, pick up the story, Andrew.
Yeah, it should be noted that many of these warrants that are being issued under the Patriot Act were very often issued illegally before, and went unchallenged because it's kind of a system where it's the government itself has to check up on itself, and that never happens if the government wants to cover it up. Consequently, what the Patriot Act really did was just make legal all the things that had been going on illegally for years. It's interesting to note that this article that I've been referencing actually says that some data indicates that there's now more surveillance being authorized by the FISA court than by all the other federal courts in the 50 states combined. So there's obviously a great number of law enforcement who is counting or who is going through this huge loophole that they've established to gain access easily to private information.
And of course, it's all in the name of fighting terrorism, and a lot of it has nothing to do with terrorism. That's what's so dishonest about this whole corrupt system. And they lying to the American people, saying, well, they were bad guys. What's wrong with using the law to get bad guys? Well, the law was never intended to get bad guys. It was intended, of course, to get terrorists. And they're not using it to get terrorists. They're using it to take away the rights, in many instances, from law-abiding citizens. Because, of course, when they're out to get you, it doesn't matter whether you're guilty or innocent. They're going to get you. And that is what's
That's
so
right.
funny.
That's right. Another very dangerous provision of the Patriot Act is Section 215, which is called the Librarian's Nightmare. Basically, it allows the FBI and other law enforcement agencies to gain records of and other quote unquote tangible items from any person or organization if the FBI claims a link to an ongoing terrorist or foreign intelligence investigation. Now, once the FBI has certified that there is this link, there is no one to second guess at the certification. The FISA court has to issue the order if the FBI so certifies it, even if there are no facts to support the assertion.
But, of course, we've seen the FBI again and again lie. They killed Randy Weaver's wife and her son, and nobody in the FBI was ever punished for their murder. And, of course, it was actually U.S. Marshals that killed their son, but the FBI killed his wife, and nobody in the FBI was ever held responsible, and yet they paid over $1 million. Now, somebody must have been responsible, or they wouldn't pay it off, but why, if you're a federal officer and you kill somebody, isn't anybody held responsible? And
yeah.
This is the thing. Can we trust these people to police themselves and to be honest with getting these warrants? And I don't think we can. I wish we could. I wish the FBI was an honorable organization. I'm sure there are a lot of honorable people in it. But at the very top, I believe it is corrupt and will continue to be corrupt as law and will misuse power as long as we give it to them.
Truly, and that's a very interesting point, Dr. Stan. There are a lot of good people in these organizations, but the side of the organization that is most worrisome is the side of the organization that my father so often refers to as the dark side of the FBI and the CIA, the side that is cloaked in secrecy, that hides what they do and uses provisions like these in the Patriot Act to gain access that should be illegal based on a constitutional right.
And the Constitution makes it very difficult sometimes to convict people, whether they be guilty or whether they be innocent. But is there anybody in the listening audience who does not think that at times innocent people have been sent to prison because, of course, they were so anxious to get a conviction that they really were unconcerned of whether the man was guilty or innocent? We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening, Andrew Skousen. Go ahead, Andrew.
All right. Well, I wanted to comment a little bit more about the librarian nightmare provision, Section 215 of the Patriot Act. The reason they call this the librarian's nightmare provision is that with CISA warrant, there has to be complete secrecy. In other words, Section 215 gags those who receive an order to produce items, records through a warrant. If someone were to disclose the order's existence, they could be fined or punished by imprisonment.
And I really think that's really interesting, because the Attorney General said no librarian has ever been, sent one of these warrants. So why are you worried about it? Well, nobody's ever been sent it. Why have that in provision of the law? And then, of course, when the Librarian Association asked a number of librarians if they'd ever gotten a warrant, many of them said, we can't answer that because we'd be sent to jail. So who are we going to believe? We're going to believe the Attorney General who says, we need this, but we've never used it? Or are we going to believe the librarians who said, we can't answer that because we'd be sent to jail? Are we really going to trust the Attorney General who lied about what happened in 911, and the former Attorney General, Janet Reno, had lied about what happened at Waco, and it simply lied about so many things? And when we have government officials who lie, how can we possibly give them the responsibility to do what's right? When we've lost the moral foundation from our leaders, then should we be surprised at all when they act immorally?
That's a very good point. One of the other interesting points is that the Patriot Act not only made it easier to gain warrants to people's information, it also expanded the amount of information that federal agencies could access. Since prior to the Patriot Act, the FBI had access to only a few types of records that were of particular use to investigating terrorists and spies. These were things like hotel registers, motels, car and truck rental agencies, storage rental facilities. Records from these places were all of that could be accessed prior to the Patriot Act. But after Section 215, the FBI could seek any tangible item, quote, including books, records, papers, documents, and other items, unquote, regardless of who holds it. This means that even the most sensitive medical tome, the most partisan political tract, the most closely guarded membership list, anything is fair game. This is true of any book or list in public libraries. This is true of anything inside of sacred religious buildings. This is true of anything inside of your own home.
Hold that thought right there. Well, Andrew is pointing out that under the Patriot Act, now the FBI has access to any list that they want to, and you have to give it to them. And, of course, they can make totally groundless demands, but you are required by law to turn that over. So pick up the story there.
Yeah. Prior to the Patriot Act, in order to get even those limited categories of records that were eligible, the FBI had to present to the FISA court specific and articulable facts giving reason to believe that the person to whom the records pertained was a spy or a terrorist. But under Section 215, the FBI doesn't need this. It only has to show, quote-unquote, probable cause that specific facts support the belief that a crime has been or will be committed, or that their evidence.
Well, I think the most frightening thing of the Patriot Act is the suspension of habeas corpus on anybody they accuse of being a terrorist. That to me is...
Agreed.
And where is the outcry from our people? And they have this one fellow named Padilla, who obviously is not a very nice guy, but of course they have held him for several years. Cannot get a court hearing. They will not present the evidence against him. He has no right of habeas corpus. We don't know whether he is guilty or whether he is innocent. And they refuse to bring him before a court because they don't want to reveal the secret information they have against him. And some of that information actually predated the 911 attack. Why were they tracing this man before 911 if they didn't know there was going to be a terrorist attack? What are they keeping secret? Are they keeping it secret from Osama bin Laden living in a cave? Were they trying to keep secret the fact that they had infiltrated the entire Islamic terrorist movement and they knew all of their actions before 9-1-1 and right at the present time? Because if the American people realized that, then they might ask why we allowed 9-1-1 to take place. So pick up the story from there. But this idea of suspending the right of habeas corpus, to me, is the most frightening thing about this whole PAYFIT Act.
It's a very good point, Dr. Stan. The right of habeas corpus is definitely one of the most important provisions that that we enjoyed under the Constitution as it was before. And habeas corpus, I think, is Latin for produce the body, meaning that if you were imprisoned, you could invoke the right of habeas corpus, forcing the courts to produce the charges against you, which is a very important right to know why you're being held and to force them to come out and tell you what they think that you're guilty of, and to bring you to court and to process you through.
And of course, the thing is that the tyrants of old would simply put you in prison and leave you there for the rest of your life. They never had to bring you forward and bring charges against you. And in English law, of course, we had this idea. You had the right of habeas corpus. It came out of Great Britain, and it came out here. But you see, the tyrants, those who would establish the dictatorship, resent that because that prevents them from arresting their political opponents and putting them in prison. They're doing away with it in England under the name of fighting terrorism. They're doing it away here in America in the name of fighting terrorism. And where is the outcry from our Christian leaders, from our conservative leaders, from our anti-communist leaders? And, of course, that's because all of those organizations have been infiltrated by the other side, and they are mute in their response. Go ahead, Andrew.
That's right. And it's also because they aren't openly using these provisions. They are still secretly using them, and the Patriot Act just serves as a basis of quieting anyone who might actually bring it to light now. And so most of the general population doesn't actually see this put in action because it's not brought to light very often, even though in my opinion, or our opinion, it's something that is being used very frequently to gather information about people. One of the most troubling parts of Section 215 is that they can target people based on speech and religion. The FBI can investigate United States persons, citizens, and legal residents based, at least in part, on their exercise of First Amendment rights, including you could be investigated based on your attendance to political or religious meetings, websites that you might visit, books that you've checked out and read or bought. And as a consequence, this can have an obviously very chilling effect once this were to start to become implemented and people start to see that they could be prosecuted for
attending
these things and voicing the First Amendment.
I mean, they monitor my emails, they monitor my faxes, they monitor my telephone calls, and I'm sure they do it for many other people. They're collecting dossiers on the American citizens, and if you doubt that, you get the book Fixing Intelligence by Major General William Odom, who headed NSA for some years, a National Security Agency, the top spy agency, and in his book, he talks about, published in 2003, he can't tell us what's going on, but he can ask questions. Should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? And I would ask you, should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? Why, most American citizens don't even understand what's going on. They don't understand NSA is monitoring all of your telephone calls and all of your faxes and all of your emails and all of your electronic communications and which websites you're listening to and which radio programs you're listening to, and everything you're doing is being recorded electronically. And you must understand, this is a prelude to the coming world dictatorship. So pick up the call there.
No, I think you're absolutely right, Dr. Stan. I think that I think all Americans would be absolutely amazed by the amount of information that is actually being recorded on obviously there are certain individuals, very likely you, Dr. Stan, as you mentioned, who they record more in-depth information about, but I personally think that they have the capabilities with the way technology is now today to record significant amounts of information about everyday lives and various shopping things with the amount of credit cards that we use. Almost everything is documented and can be accessed by people working with warrants made free by the Patriot Act.
And Chris, yeah. Before that, though, they know every telephone call you made, where you made that call, who called you. All of this is recorded, permanently recorded. Why are they keeping all those records? Because they want to track your every motion and call. Well, let's go to Roger, who's calling here from Pennsylvania, who's been hanging on patiently. Hi, Roger. Do you have a comment?
Yes, thanks, gents. It should be obvious that from the every month or two at least blurb from some high administration, Justice Department, Homeland, Hitler, etc. official that selected for a special scrutiny, of course, are the so-called right-wing extremists, self-identified constitutional restorationists. Now, I don't doubt that once every 100 years one can ferret out such an individual with terrorist tendencies, but of course it didn't happen in the case of Tim McVeigh, who was, of course, rejected for association by at least one militia group and a number of other so-called right-wing extremist groups.
Okay, now, Roger, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, just the notion that somehow you're going to have these right-wing extremists wanting to ally themselves with Muslim terrorists, which would be anathema, I should think, even to all but the very loosest of such persons, if they had an idea of...
Okay, do you have a question at all?
Yeah, well, just to bounce that off you for the ridiculousness of these assertions.
Well, first of all, I would feel that it's not ridiculous at all. I believe that some of the right-wing militia groups would align themselves with the Islamic terrorists because of a mutual hatred, first of the Jews and then of the American government. So, actually, that was one of the major contentions of Stephen Jones, who defended Timothy McVeigh, is that there was a link between the right-wing, extreme right-wing, and the Islamic terrorists in the Philippines.
Oh, yeah,
now, wait a minute, Roger. And the other thing is that they are watching the left-wingers as well. They're watching the people on the left who are concerned, and they're watching the people on the right who are concerned. So it's not just the right-wing they're watching. They're watching the left. Anybody who is willing to take a stand is a potential enemy of those who would establish a tyranny. So did you have a question you wanted to ask?
Yeah, well, I thought kind of McVeigh was, in that regard, the exception to the rule for what these putative links are they're trying to always make with about zero success to tar the right wing with this label.
Well, of course, I think Timothy McVeigh, we do not know the truth about Timothy McVeigh. He told his sister he was part of a secret special forces unit involved in illegal activity. Well, he was certainly involved in illegal activity. Isn't it amazing? Now, that was, of course, the fact that fact was brought out at the trial in Colorado. Anybody would like to document that? The book by Stephen Jones, Others Unknown, The Oklahoma City Bombing Conspiracy. If you can't find it, we'll get to the pages where that story is told, totally blacked out by the controlled media. Okay, thanks very much, Roger. What are your thoughts about what Roger was saying, Andrew, before we go on?
Yeah, it's one of the most interesting cases, I think, of the dialectic. The book that you just mentioned seems to indicate that there were agent provocateurs who encouraged McVeigh and taught him and found in him a good icon to carry out that attack that they orchestrated, I believe. As part of the dialectic philosophy, it's important to have people who are willing to go overboard on the other end, so that you can have an excuse to start implementing the policies that you otherwise wouldn't get people to accept.
Okay, Joe, go ahead. Did anything else on the Patriot Act? You want to get into something else?
I'd just like to mention briefly, more as a word of caution than anything else, lest we think that anyone proposing revisions to the Patriot Act are on our side, is that Attorney General Gonzalez has... has proposed two amendments to Section 215. And although it would improve, these are not what we want because they're not enough to give us back the liberties that we had before, our appropriate liberties before the Patriot Act was enacted. And that is that his suggestion is that the First Amendment would allow the subject of records of a record search to consult with an attorney and to challenge the search warrant in court. So basically this would allow the attorney more access to the warrant so that it wouldn't be quite a secret. But it would still allow the expanded range of our personal effects to be searched, which is still inappropriate. The second amendment would limit any requests for records to those which are quote unquote relevant to a national security investigation. And this currently applies to grand jury subpoenas issued in ordinary criminal probes. But although this would be an improvement, it would still not take away the chilling effect that persists on people's First Amendment right, knowing that that they might be targeted based on their political or religious views. So we just have to really scrutinize people who purport to be willing to fix these holes in our rights by suggesting amendments to the Patriot Act.
Okay, fine. So basically, what we need, of course, is to get our elected representatives to come out and sunset everything and try to repeal as much of that as we can. Would that be a fair statement?
It would be, and repeal is definitely preferable over sunsetting. Most of the sunset provisions wouldn't take place until next December, and that gives them an awful lot of time to work out other solutions.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, I think we've given that enough airtime. Briefly, let's talk about a little bit about the economy. There's been some very interesting reports that have come in about the economy, about inflation, about what's been happening with our with things that have affected gas prices, which I think everyone has felt significantly. What happens is that Americans have been hit basically with an economic double whammy last month. They had to pay more for gasoline as well as clothes, airline tickets, and several other products. And the second whammy is that their wages are not keeping up with inflation. If I could attempt to briefly explain a little bit about the economics going on here, what we have is because the dollar is being used in the world market so broadly that as our country inflates money and gives it away easily and freely to other countries, other countries find themselves with money easier, and consequently they have more access to buying up economic resources with this excess money.
In other words, the other countries have a great deal of American dollars. What are you going to do with dollars? You're either going to just hold them where they decrease in value, or you're going to come to the United States and or Canada or someplace, you're going to buy things and get rid of those dollars, so they're not going to continue declining in value. And the Chinese have come in and bought up a tremendous number of our industries. They bought IBM PC, the people who began the PC computers, and now it's owned by the Chinese Communists. Many of our major factories have been bought up by the Chinese Communists and have been exported piece by piece right over to Communist China. So they're going into Canada, they're buying up the oil resources and minerals resources there. They're going into Venezuela and buying up the oil resources there. So they are, of course, using those dollars in one respect, of course, to feed us economically, to buying things that we once dominated. Go ahead.
Right, and that's happening not only in the technology areas, but in all aspects of the economy. I deal a lot with the construction industry, and the price of wood and concrete has absolutely skyrocketed in recent years, both with the amount of building that's going on in Iraq, as especially it is going on with China right now. So what's happening is there's a lot of free money outside of the United States being used to buy up a lot of resources out there. Consequently, the resources are becoming more scarce and becoming more expensive. What happens now is back home, here we have, we don't yet see, it takes a while for the dollars to trickle back to the United States, and so we don't see right away, the easy part of the money, but we do feel the prices of everything else going up around us. And what happens is that causes firms and industries to tighten their belts and consequently to decrease wages where they can. And so what we've seen is that prices have risen, but wages have dropped. And so consequently, Americans are being hit three ways. Number one, their money is worth less because of inflation. Number two, it takes more of these worth less dollars to buy commodities. And three, they're making less of these worth less dollars to buy more expensive commodities with. And it results in a compound effect that is producing a very difficult situation.
Well, I think they're intentionally lowering the living standards of the American people, but they don't want the American people to know that this is the ultimate plan, is to wipe out the middle class of our country. And so as long as the people think it's just sort of happening by accident, that they don't understand there is a massive master plan. Then, of course, it's called the Earth Charter. You can pull it down off the Internet, the Earth Charter. If you don't have access, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Ask for a copy of the Earth Charter. Point 10 talks about redistribution of the wealth within nations and between nations. In other words, what do you mean by redistribution of the wealth between nations? Why we transfer the wealth of the American middle class to other countries? And we impoverish our people, and of course we enrich people in other countries. That's what it's all about. But we can't tell the American people that, can we, Andrew?
They would certainly find it distasteful.
All right, Andrew, we're out of time. Andrew, we're out of time. How can people get your WorldNet Daily?
Good. They can go to the internet website, worldaffairsbrief.com. That's www.worldaffairsbrief.com. That's all one word. Or they can call, and they can call toll-free and order a print edition of it if they call toll free 1-877.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Andrew Skousen. Andrew, what's the telephone number people can call if they'd like to get a free copy of the World Affairs Brief?
It's toll free 1-877-518-5888. That's 1-877-518-5888. 855-888.
All right, very good. Well, thank you so very much. I appreciate you being with us. And our guest this evening has been Andrew Skousen, who is with World Affairs Brief. Thank you so very much for sharing with us tonight.
My pleasure, Dr.
Good night. God bless.
Good night.
All right, fine. This is Andrew Skousen. And, of course, we've been talking about the latest World Affairs Brief, what's going on in Venezuela, and, of course, what's going on as far as the Patriot Act, and then what's going on economically as we move from prosperity into this recession and eventually the wiping out of the middle class. And if you don't make your arrangements now, you're going to be one of those people who's going to end up living in poverty. And this great tragedy is our leaders know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. And those of you who have not yet read my August, September, October newsletters at RadioLiberty.com need to get those newsletters. As we mentioned last hour, one of the best books we carry is called The Coming Battle. The Coming Battle, it was written in 1891, but it's just as true today as when it was written. The books, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, Gold for Investment, Gold for Survival, both by Professor Sutton, and then Fiat Money Inflation in France, and the video phenomenon. That is The Coming Battle, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, Gold for Survival, Gold for Investment, Fiat Money Inflation in France, and the video phenomenon, the Monopoly Men. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, I suggest the August newsletter 2004 on this subject. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Oh, that's 1-800-544-8927, but go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Look at the various items we carry, the books, the videos, the four tape sets. You also look at the Berkey and other items we carry there, the Miracle 2 soap products, Sanjian radios, a few other things we carry, the Robinson Homeschool curriculum that do help us do what we do. We hope, of course, you'll listen to our programs on the Internet or listen to our archive programs. And your job is to tell other people about our program, because we're trying to warn the American people what's coming down the line. And your job is to get people listening to our programs and let me try to educate them. And they're going to start out listening and they're going to say, oh, well, this guy's got to be crazy. But if they'll keep listening before long, they're going to say, you know, now we're afraid that maybe he's not crazy. Maybe this is really true. And, of course, if you want me to document anything I say, for instance, the fact that there is a plan to redistribute the wealth of the American people to other countries, it's all in the Earth Charter, written by Mikhail Gorbachev and by Marie Strong and by Stephen Rockefeller, who is the son of Nelson Rockefeller. And the Rockefellers have always been involved with the occult, with the dark side. That's how they got to be so wealthy. And if you haven't seen the video, they sold their souls for rock and roll. You need to see that, the 3, 4, or 10-hour version, and we'll have it both on video or DVD, that they sold their souls for rock and roll. You need to get Megiddo 1. You need to get Megiddo 2. You need to find out about the spiritual battle. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to get the book or the video or the audio tape or all three of them together, and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.